Hey, listeners, and welcome back. This week's guest is so fun and fantastic. We spoke with Julie Falcone. She wrote the book, literally, on creating positive relationships with those around you, all while being honest and pure, with a little humor thrown in. For caretakers, sometimes life can get lonely and support can dwindle fast. Julie talks with us about how she found a way to communicate with those around her and take some of the pressure off. This is a must listen for any parent or caretaker. Parenting is tough. Let's not make it any harder.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, Eddie Gagnon. And in the opposite corner, Kristen Gagnon. This is What's Special About Special.
I wanted to say that.
Well, hello there. My name's Eddie Gagnon.
Eddie, I don't want to be here all night.
Welcome and thank you for joining us. My name's Eddie Gagnon.
That was perfect. Kristen.
Your voice. You know, guys, my life is hectic. Working full-time from home, virtual homeschool, podcasting, and really just being an awesome mom and wife. Grocery shopping is the last thing I want to do. I'm not ashamed. No, I'm proud to say I rely heavily on Instacart to deliver fresh groceries to our home. Instacart delivers in as fast as 1 hour. I even get a personal shopper to get all of my favorite groceries, so I know it's always right. Right now, Instacart is offering our listeners free delivery on their first order over $35. By following the link in our show notes, you are helping support our show as well. And isn't that just a win-win-win?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Today we have Julie Falcone, writer of Dear Loved Ones. Thank you for joining us, Julie.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I'm real excited about this episode. I think I say that about every episode in the beginning, but I am excited about all of our guests when they come on. I get like antsy to talk to everybody.
I'm a little excited because I wrote all these questions myself.
Eddie did the prep today.
I did the research. And so when this all goes terrible, it's my fault.
What if it's like the best?
Then I'm going to take all the credit too. But at least, you know, I started off from a low, so we can only go high from here.
And only go up.
So.
Oh, you're funny.
Low expectations is literally, I think, how I live my life. Then you can never be disappointed.
Yeah. You can't go wrong then, right?
So we're good.
So
exactly.
Julie, tell our audience, you know, we like to start off a little bit about you. So tell us a little bit about you. Where are you from originally?
So I'm from right outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And my father was a firefighter, so we were kind of like right out. We had to be in the city, but we couldn't, you know, we didn't want to be in the city. So we're just a little bit outside. Yeah. And I have a older brother and an older sister. So it was a lovely family of five.
Fun. What's it like growing up with a father who's a firefighter? It seems like I have a couple of friends whose husbands are firefighters. And I think what a different dynamic that must be.
I was always really thought it was cool and proud, like, you know, oh, my dad's a firefighter, you know. We could even sometimes if there were fires in the area, we would drive.
Oh, cool.
To watch him, which was kind of neat slash scary, but really, yeah. But really neat. But for the most part, all it meant for us is he would sleep all day for a 6 o'clock shift or vice versa. He'd be coming in at, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning. And then he was a real estate agent on his days off. So it's kind of like four on, four off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So he has always been busy but it was neat. Like one time I saw him driving the fire truck to the grocery store. Oh. Because the station needed lunch meat.
Oh, that's
like, that's my dad. Oh my God. Oh, I get like, I'm getting excited. Oh, cause like, I'll be honest, like real men, even real men, like look up to fire. Like I look up to firefighters. Like those guys are amazing. And it's just like, I'm jealous.
And it's so funny because like my dad smoked, and I swear to God, he'd fall asleep with a lit cigarette by the bed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like the worst with that stuff. And we'd be like, but I think because he was a firefighter.
No, he's a professional. He can do that.
Old school. That's like, I think that's very old school firefighter. Like they all smoked, you know, it's just.
Can you imagine his lungs, right? Like I say all the time, like, Dad, I don't understand. I can't.
Must have been all those fires. You're like, no.
Yeah. No, my great grandfather was a firefighter here in the area, and he was like known by everyone, and he lived to be 100 or 99, but we told him he was 100 because he really wanted to make it that far. But we always said, like, he was a firefighter for so long, how you live to be 99. And then there are people like never smoke a day in their life, do everything right. It's just so, you know, you can't, you just got to live your life and enjoy your life.
And I think that's what my dad is. My dad, he always says, I work hard and I play hard.
Yes.
And he will be the one that outlives 100%. He will outlive everybody.
Yeah. Hey, so you grew up in Pennsylvania and you're still in Pennsylvania now. So you kind of, that's your home base.
Yeah. We're only like 25 minutes from where I grew up.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So we didn't go very far.
That's fun. Then you said you have two other siblings.
So yes, my brother is the oldest. He's 6 years older than me. And then my sister is 3 years after him. And then 3 years later was me. They were very on point.
I feel like those 3 year gaps are like
perfect.
Perfect, man.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Did you do that? How old are yours?
No, there's a 4 year gap.
It's
that's
just
because,
1 year too far.
We got set off.
No, yeah, we got set off course. But it 4 years, I've now realized, as especially as they're getting older, is just 1 year too far of a gap because they need totally separate things all the time.
Yeah.
They're in completely different phases.
Different phase, even from the day one. Like when my son was born, my daughter was 4. So they didn't want to really, she didn't really want to play with him. She wasn't into the same types of thing. I couldn't put them in front of the same cartoons. Yeah. I couldn't, there was just never, and still to this day, she's in middle school and she's not really into it. And he's 9 and he's ready to go and play and move. And they're just, they just always need different attention, different everything. So now looking back, I'm like either a little bit closer or a little bit further. Would have been
so that's interesting because we had ours are 2 years apart.
That's perfect.
And that's what we thought. That was our plan. And
that's too close. It's too close.
Too close. A little too close.
3 years is perfect, man.
I mean, I think we were in survival mode for a while in the youngers. So like, I think like, maybe I think three, you might be right. 3 years might be it.
That actually makes sense. So, cause I feel like 2 years, like it's almost like you're never out of diapers.
Well, no, 2 years is they're like, they're able to gang up cause they do like the same things for just enough time to create a camaraderie. 3 years is like one's phasing out while the other one's just getting started. So it's enough where they're like, we enjoy this, but it's like, they're always on that cusp of like, we enjoy this, but I'm not going to enjoy that anymore. But they're like, okay, well, and then you have like a month in between and the other one starts up with the new thing that the other one's getting out of.
And it's you like, can so have there's different like, friends at 3 years. Like my sisters were never my friends. They wanted no parts of me, but these guys, they can have the same friend groups, which can be an issue at times. Yep. You know,
like, I can't hang out with all my friends because Tommy is telling everybody, you know, that like, about me wetting the bed yesterday.
Right. Like, yes. And it's not that, and it's not, we're not at the point where they're sticking up for each other. It's more that
they're competing.
The yes.
Yeah. So, oh, interesting.
3 years. Now we know.
Yes. I know that time. Too late. I'm done. So we won't be trying that again.
Well, no, I was like, we got the cards, we're dealt, whatever.
So,
you know what? We would have had more.
Really?
I think I would, my plan was 5, but you get what you get for a reason. And our youngest made the decision for us. It was like, you got it. We're right. I'm not ready. Not ready. Not ready. And then that kind of made the decision for us. So same thing. You get what you get.
That's that.
I think that, you know.
Yeah, no, we got 2 and that's all we're getting. I made that decision for
us. But we can adopt now. We can foster.
And we're not talking about this on another episode.
See, I'm literally just, all right, fine. Sorry.
Oh, my sister's the same way. I thought I was going to love babies forever. I'm a baby girl.
Oh, see, I wasn't.
I love everything baby. And I just thought my uterus was going to constantly crave this no matter how old I get. But I was surprised when it did shut off, it shut off. Mm-hmm. Like I don't really even want to necessarily like, I want to hold your new baby, but I don't need to eat your baby.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. I actually say that to like people when they're like, I don't really know. I'm like, listen, you know how I knew? Cause I'm not really a baby person, but with both my kids, I was like, oh, this is so great. I love being pregnant. I love it all. And I said, you know how I knew I was done? When I saw someone else's baby and I was like, that's cute. I love it. I'm happy for you, but
so what does that mean?
I don't really want to like help you change its diaper or feed it, or I'm out of that. Now, Eddie, on the other hand, he's like the person, you like meet those people who just keep fostering cats and keep taking in cats from the shelter. That's Eddie.
I'm not a cat lady.
No. But if you could do that with children.
Yeah, technically you can.
He would just open our doors and say, do you need a place to stay? Yeah, right here. Yeah. Come here.
Oh, I love that. Oh,
no.
I'm more like that. But my husband he's really good. He's like really good at boundaries in general, like all of them. And like even what is it when you know when to stop eating, you have like, what is it? Like a certain discipline.
Yeah.
He has that in every part of his life. And I am the opposite of that. So he knows how to shut me down. Cause I could see me being like, what does everyone need? All we need is love, everyone, you know, type of thing.
That's so funny.
Well, I have that too, though. Like I have cause that's all I want to do is like take care and teach. And like, but I do have that reservation where it's like, okay, there is a fine line. Like I can only do so much help. If I'm like, you know, like still staying in control and staying on top and making sure that we like take care of everything.
Well, I think for us, the big thing is that like we also are very conscious. Like we started young. So we had our kids young and we didn't really get that like whole honeymoon time for the two of us to like travel or do whatever. So right. I think what always turns around and comes back to us is we're like, oh, very soon we can just leave these children and go do things. Like we even can do it now a little bit. Our daughter can babysit and we can go have we can go to the bar and have an appetizer. And I'm like, we're dating again. This is amazing. Oh. And so we're like, every time that happens, we're like, oh, it's only going to get better when they're gone.
I know. You know how everyone says like, oh, enjoy this. You don't realize how good it is. And for a while I was like, shut it. No, you're forgetting how hard it is.
Yeah.
And now, it's weird. I say like, is it weird that I am jealous of my 75-year-old parents?
Yeah. Who, no,
like,
I get it.
Are alone in that house. And like, it's always clean. And
it's always clean. Oh my God. That's going to be my favorite part.
They could sit in quiet and calm.
So tell us how you're connected to the disabilities/special needs community.
So, apparently I had ADHD growing up, but I didn't know that. We didn't know that. So my oldest son is diagnosed with ADHD, anxiety, and depression. And he was diagnosed, I want to say, it's been so long, but I want to say at fourth grade, we started to notice some things kind of went down that way. We started to notice. My second son, Matthew, he is diagnosed with anxiety, depression, sensory processing. What am I missing? Did I say anxiety? ADHD. Mm-hmm. Oppositional defiant disorder. I think that's all of them.
They all kind of go together, I feel like, a lot of the time.
The whole, right. Then Lucy is not diagnosed with anything. It's funny, we wait. Like if she just happens to forget her water bottle, we're like, oh, is she losing?
Yeah.
Do you think she's an idiot? Yeah. And then my youngest is Chris, and he is on the spectrum. He has ADHD and anxiety and sensory processing. And so it's interesting. My youngest, right from birth, we knew that he was very different. He was so much more needy. And unbelievable. What it ended up being was it's almost like an attachment disorder where he couldn't be without me to the point like he thought I was like an arm and he couldn't live without his arm. So, and we had three kids by that point. We had this down. So to have this infant who was not like we would go out to dinner and the babysitter would call and say, you have to come home. I mean, and we would leave the house and I would say things like, listen, if there's a fire, get them out. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, we're just paying you to get them out if there's a fire. You don't have to, you know,
right.
Don't worry about trying to to get them to bed or do anything. And we couldn't make it work. So he was pretty obvious from the get-go. My Gabriel was in fourth grade and he started to hate school all of a sudden. And it was so interesting. He started to, I can't believe this is my life. I'm going to be in school. Then I'm going to get a job. It was very like, oh my gosh, is this life?
Doomsday, yeah.
Yeah, guess what? It is, you know? But in fourth grade, we don't.
And it is terrible.
Right. Yes, stay young forever. So we started to notice with him, like, huh. And he was really good about verbalizing his feelings. So he went from depressed to, you know, thinking about hurting himself. And so with him, it was like ER visits out of fear. And then ADHD came in, but I didn't know that at the time because he didn't have an issue with school work.
Right.
He was a great student. Like it was more, so his came out first as depression. That's how we kind of figured that's how we kind of got in the doctor system.
Right.
And my Matthew, my second, he was impulsive and angry, very angry. No, he used to be a dreamboat. And then like he was young, something switched and he got very angry, very impulsive, and he was hard to please. And then he would hit, it was just extremely impulsive. And what, you know, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
There's something really wrong. We have to get into therapy. And then one therapist finally said, oh no, that's ADHD. He needs to go see somebody for diagnosis. ADHD, no, he doesn't have focus issues.
Yeah.
I never even heard of this impulsive side of ADHD. Are you kidding? You know? So his came out in such a different way.
He was just getting that energy. He's just trying to get that energy out of his body. Yeah.
Yes. And I think he was so unhappy and he didn't know why, right? Yeah. Like, why am I not able like to behave or to, right. you know, like
control my body or control. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
We've got one of those.
Yeah. So his came out in anger. Mm-hmm. And then Christopher's, he was like a wild child. Like this, I don't mean this to sound negative, but he was like a wild animal who would just, when he was angry, he would hit and yell and grunt and everything and kind of crawl all over me. I mean, it would look like I came out of a fight, you know, even as a little kid. And when if he didn't want to talk, he didn't talk. And that was like, he was very obvious.
Right.
It was very obvious.
Yeah.
So we kind of got into the whole, to be honest, I think we got into the whole real middle of the community with Chris.
Yeah. I was going to ask, is that where it started?
Yeah.
Was with your youngest?
I feel like it's weird. Like I said, they were all different grades.
Yeah.
But Christopher's was so obvious that we kind of went with him first.
Now, do you think, like, I know, I feel like this has been kind of been a common theme we've heard, but do you think that opened your eyes to be more receptive to hearing that any of your other kids might have needed some support?
So it's interesting. We had Christopher in every therapy under the sun before he had most diagnoses. You know, I think he had like, because of the sensory processing, we had him in occupational therapy and all of that. We knew there was stuff. We never even really like worked with a diagnosis with him. In the meantime, the older boys were getting their diagnoses.
Oh.
So it's almost the opposite. When Chris was old enough, in my opinion, to start thinking about and talking about medicine, because it worked so well with my other boys. I was kind of just waiting for him to grow to a certain age so I could take him.
Right.
And when he was at, and I was ready, hey, this is what he has. He has ADHD, he has anxiety.
You've been through it, you know.
Listen, yeah. And this is what works well with them. They do really well on Ritalin. They do really well on Zoloft, you know, like, because, and so when they said, no, it's not ADHD, it's autism. That's where I feel like it was like halt, screech.
Yeah.
And everything, my whole, oddly, it's like everything changed in that moment. I mean, I'm ADHD, sure. What do you need? What do you got? What do you know? Like,
well, I was just going to say, like, it's funny. Like, I mean, they're all real diagnoses, like not to put any on a different pedestal or in a different level. But in the world of disabilities or special needs, mental health falls, it almost seems like mental health seems to fall under one.
Yeah.
And autism or a physical disability or something, or even OCD falls in like another world where really it's all under, they're all struggling. These kids are all struggling. They all need the same support. They all need therapies or whatever, but, or even adults that are in that same world. But I feel like when you hit something that's like, ADHD has been talked about for so long now that it's just very like, oh, that kid in school has got ADHD. Here's medication. Let's move on. And there's supports and we have a classic way of handling that. Whereas autism is like this and it's been so in the news and it's been so, it's like this real diagnosis. It hits you like a freight train and you're like, oh, where do we go now? This is all new. And there's so many supports. Sometimes it's almost too many. And yeah.
And it's so true because with the ADHD piece in our house, it was very violent. There was a lot of violence and a lot of physicality. And to me, that was the hardest part.
Oh, I bet.
And so when I would say to my friends, oh yeah, you know, they have ADHD. Oh yeah, we all have ADHD. Oh, I have a little ADHD, right? And I'm thinking, no, you're not getting it. Like when I shut the door, you don't realize what's happening. But then when I say, oh, my youngest has autism, oh dear God, God bless you. You know, and I'm thinking, well, he's not beating, you know, he's not trying.
He's
to
almost not struggling in the same way. Exactly. Like, it's not that it, you know, yes, it's difficult for, you know, the physical stuff to be going on, but the harder thing is to watch them. You know, you're watching and you're going, they're in pain in some way. Yeah. Whereas I feel like, and yes, there are kids with ASD who are who the struggle is even more real, right? It is a spectrum, right. And the spectrum is huge. But I think when you're in that middle to high end of that spectrum, they're functioning and they need some supports, but it's easy as a parent to go, oh, I see your need and I can meet your need. Where when I think when there's, you know, anxiety or depression or anything like that, it's like you're just seeing them in pain and it's really hard to understand how to meet that need.
Right. And it's such a different, and you're right. Like, I feel like in the community, in my, even like my friend group and my neighborhood and family, there is definitely a different weight put on every diagnosis.
Yeah.
And I think I leaned on the autism diagnosis.
Right.
Like, that's my start. Oh yes, I have children with autism and AIDS, because that's the one that, oh, has the most weight. But in reality, I think the ADHD kicked my ass.
Well, that's funny too that you say it like that, like where if you're meeting someone and you're in the discussion and you start and you're saying, if you say, you know, my youngest son is on the spectrum, has ASD, and then you are labeling, all of a sudden it's like, wow, you have a lot going on.
Yeah.
Whereas if you said, you know, a few of my kids have ADHD, they go, oh, that must be tough.
And then
are they on medication? Exactly. And then we move on. Where it's funny, I think, how society just happens to perceive things. And it's, I don't think it's at any fault of the person. I don't know why I always do this. I make an excuse for somebody who reacts a certain way, but I truly do think that like no one's doing anything intentionally, but it is how society talks about things and how things are out there, even in the media. So people just react to in the way that they're used to hearing things.
Right. And I think education is a big one. Like for instance, ADHD, if I were to read it on a page, especially before.
Yeah.
It's a focus thing. Okay. Well, yeah. So let's test in medicine, get you back on track and get back into school and you'll be fine. You know,
sometimes it even almost gets put on the education side, like dyslexia. Like, oh, they have ADHD, they have dyslexia. Let's put it on the education side. We'll just teach them differently.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I think that's exactly it. Like they don't even, some people don't even know. Oh, when I say my kid has ADHD, I mean, shit's going down at my house.
Yeah.
You know, like this isn't a focus thing at home. But again, there's a lot that people don't know because we shut our doors. And I sure as heck wasn't shouting into the rooftops that my son was, you know, threatening me or whatever.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So there's so much I think that people don't know.
Yeah. I think that for sure is the thing. I think that, you know, that's the key. I mean, we've talked to so many people and they talk about, you know, themselves struggling with ADHD or someone that's related to them or their child. And like you had, like when you had said, like, you know, and they suffer from anxiety and depression. I don't think we've talked to anybody who's got one without the others, because, right. Well, you can have anxiety and depression, right? But and not have ADHD, but I've not talked to someone who has ADHD without anxiety and depression. And it totally makes sense when you really know what falls under that blanket.
I have ADHD without anxiety and depression.
Yeah, right. You definitely have all three.
I know, shut up.
Maybe on different levels, but it's all there. And that's, I think that when that happens, and the other two aren't talked about as in the circle, it's just like, oh, that doesn't seem so bad. But then when you're like, you have no idea how much this child is. And as a child, you're still figuring out the world and how your brain works and how life goes. So you throw middle school, which is usually when kids get diagnosed, into all of that. It's like, how are you expecting these kids to cope?
Right. Well, it's interesting because growing up, I was diagnosed with depression all the way up. And even, you know, all through college, I had depression. That's what I had. And then it wasn't until I was an adult, and I'm going to say in like the last 5 years after going to therapy, that, wait, you have depression because you have unmanaged ADHD your entire life. And then it was like, wait, what? Oh, and then when I got the ADHD under control, guess what? You know, the depression took care of itself in a sense. So it really is so related.
Well, I know. Not to speak for Eddie, but I know you can probably speak to that because Eddie recently was he was diagnosed younger, but recently just started meds.
Oh gosh. Congratulations and welcome. Oh, isn't it amazing?
You'd say congratulations to me.
No, it is. No, it is really good. Like I was self-medicating. So it's like, I got my diagnosis when I was 13, and by 15 years old, I was just self-medicating, like smoking weed every day. And that
it got, you know,
changed a little bit. But then, you know, I needed something to kind of,
I feel like,
figure it out.
It was more aware to you when the COVID happened, you were laid off. We were discussing starting a business and we're home 24/7 together. Right. And at one point I just looked at you and I said, I cannot do this with you anymore. Like, I can't even have we can't have a conversation. You're all over the place. And I feel like I have a third child.
I don't know what it's like.
Your anxiety was through the roof.
Yeah. I was puking every morning.
He was sick every morning going to work. Oh, no. Every day he'd go to work, he'd be sick. And honestly, on a wife's perspective, even after. But, you know, I've had two cook jobs. Like, I've been in two different places that I'm very like, I'll do that. I'll work at the same place for 20 years. Like, but I feel like for you, you were always looking for something always. And so it was like, you would do a job, you would excel at it. And you were looking for the next step and you couldn't sit still.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because you weren't like bouncing around jobs and like being flaky, but you were just, you needed another challenge and you needed to go And that was giving you anxiety. And then it just like, it was this like cycle. As soon as you started the meds, like day one, pretty much.
Yeah.
You came to me and you were like, my anxiety is almost gone. Oh. And I was like, that's one of those things where like, you can't even put that into words.
I don't even want to think about it. I'm just getting all anxious.
But you can't put that into words for people when you're like, you need to just try different things. Cause when you were 13, the medication you were taking then, I mean, the truth is it's made for adults. Yeah. So you do have to try different things and see what works. And it was easy to say, this doesn't work for me. I'm not using it.
Right. And I'm not going to try anything else because you're right. You have to go through a whole bunch of different ones.
Yeah. I remember like when you were considering taking meds again, I remember saying to you, like, listen, these meds are made for adults. It will affect your brain different now than it did then. You may feel differently taking it.
Yeah, I know.
And boy, like now I'll say, like the doctor has said, like, you don't have to take it on the weekends, like feel free. And you're like, I'd prefer to just take it.
Yeah.
Me too.
My God.
I don't understand why you, oh my God. I feel like if I don't take it, like I don't know if it's, at the time I think, is it mental? But no, it's not. Like, it just feels better.
You know what? Even if it is, if it's a placebo effect, it's working.
More in control. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I would like to I'm going to have to tell my husband all of this because I have diagnosed him with anxiety for sure. And I just keep saying, oh God, just get meds. Because it's breaking my heart to see you like this. And he's like, no, I'm fine. I'm
so hard for men too, though.
And I'm like, do us all a favor.
You know what though? Like that does roll right back into having children that have diagnoses or whatever, because I know for me as a mother, when we started going through everything with Eddie, I was very hesitant. I had so much anxiety dealing with everything going on. I was very hesitant to go on any medication. And I had, actually, it was the person who like helps us with early, was helping us with early intervention, come to me and be like, listen, it doesn't have to be a forever thing, but let's get you, it's almost like a cleanse for your body. Like you're just resetting. Right. Let's get yourself be able to breathe again and let's get through this tunnel. And then if you want to, you can always come off a medication, but if you don't ever start it, where are you?
Well, you know, it's so interesting because my number two, Matthew, when he had hit, he was like, it was almost like he was out of control. We started to lose him, right? Like he was going inward and there was, I felt like I literally was losing my connection and he didn't have a connection with anybody else. It was, if I was lucky, if I got it. So when we started to really lose him, the doctor said, I think what we need to do is put him on this mood stabilizer that has some pretty bad side effects, but same word she used, reset. We need to reset him because he is really struggling. And so we put him on this med and listen, he did, he probably gained 60 pounds in maybe 6 or 7 months.
Wow.
And that was one of the big side effects. And that's huge. Like that's a big deal. But he was a completely different person on the inside too. Like he changed so much. So physically there was a negative, but I was willing to deal with that part later because again, it was, it was that reset. And now that it's been a little while, he's off of it. But it's exactly right. It worked so amazing. But again, if I would have been too nervous and too afraid, I knew like my husband was having a really hard time with the idea of this little boy gaining so much weight.
I bet. Yeah.
But to me it was worth it, but yeah, so it is, you're right. You don't have to stay on it forever.
No.
Yeah.
And medication. I mean, medication is scary, especially when you're thinking about giving it to kids. Cause the truth is like these medications are usually created for adults, adult brains, adult bodies. So it is really scary when you're considering that jump. But you know, I think that if you're already scared, then you're already in the right place, had a like mind space to go, okay, let me really logically think this through. Is this going to work for our family? You know, how can we do this in moderation that will make everything, you know, work for everybody? If you're the parent that's already scared, then you're already the parent that's thinking about your kid. You know, the kids you're going to worry about are the ones the parents are like, I don't know. I don't care. Just give them whatever you want to give them.
Yeah.
Right.
Those are the kids that get in trouble.
I always say all the time, if you're going to take the medicine, then you got to do the therapy. Like, so that was very important to me with the kids. And as they got older, the therapy was getting more and more annoying for them. Right.
Right.
But I remember thinking, I can't start this process with you unless you're talking to somebody at the same time to learn those skills that are, you know, because
tools, they need a toolbox. You know, one thing in your toolbox is your medication. Another thing in your toolbox is therapy. Another thing in your toolbox is social, you know, getting out with people, exercise, like these are all tools you're putting in a toolbox and you need to be using all of them. And I think exactly what you said, like if you're teaching that to kids at a younger age, it's now becoming just what they do, right? It's the same as how they eat. If you're teaching kids to eat healthy when they're little, they're just going to be healthy eaters as adults. They won't be picky eaters. I think it's the same concept. Just people don't really think of it that way when they think of mental health. It's like, give them all the tools they need from when they're younger, and they're going to be healthier adults, you know?
Right. And it's interesting to see, like, so Matthew now, I can see him using, you know, I could see him getting angry. And now you can see him using tools. Like if he goes up into his room and slams the door, good for you, because before he would have probably punched a hole through that door. So like, it's interesting to see that they still remember it. You know, mine have the bigs haven't been in therapy for a long time now. And, but it's there.
Yep. Yeah. And really, like, you know, and like you said, like, I think the big thing is like the fact that you're even reinforcing that it's okay to slam a door. We all slam doors. Mm-hmm. Instead of, I feel like if they're being taught that, like, you can't have zero anger, everyone's got anger. We can't just say no anger. That's not teaching them anything, right? It's just control.
And it's what we were saying. Yeah. About low expectations, right? That's what we were low expectations. My expectations are so low. You didn't punch the door today. Hallelujah. Let's go out for ice cream. Yeah. You know, I mean, for a while, that's how we did things.
Yeah.
And it's, and my husband is the opposite. And he says, you know, don't walk away from me when I'm talking to you. You know, he's a very traditional.
Right.
And he was brought up in that way. And so it's very interesting.
Well, we're training ourselves as parents as well, right? Like, I think we're doing that on a regular basis, just like you're working on. I feel like we neglect how to say it. Like, you know, everywhere you hear, oh, marriage is work and you guys have to work. You always are working on it and you're always changing together. And, you know, and we do that in our marriage. We're constantly trying to like evolve and work on things. We forget
She's
that we have
constantly asking me to change a lot of things. I'm constantly evolving. Yeah, totally.
You're doing a great job. But I think as parents, the same thing, like we have to evolve ourselves as parents too. Our kids are, you can't be the same parent when your kid is 9 months as you are when your kid is 13.
Yeah.
Right.
You're just a different parent. And it's your responsibility as a parent to evolve. Just like you're making, you have a relationship with your child and a commitment. You have to work on that relationship with your child.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it's very interesting. I say all the time, joking around with my husband, I'm like, geez, you know, we've been in so much therapy. We are amazing, but I will have to remind him sometimes and say, okay, I'm the nagging wife who says, we're not going to yell. Yelling doesn't do anything. They don't hear you. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. After I just yelled, usually I just yell. And then I'm like, we're not going to yell, Eddie.
Eddie, we're trying not to yell at the house.
He's like, you just yelled at them. I'm like, I know, but now I realized it. So you need to.
God love him. My husband did a yelling thing and Matt came into my room and he's like, you know, Dad's being a real jerk. Right. And I said, I'm sure he had a really rough day, whatever it may be. Dad comes in and says, I'd like to apologize for yelling. I shouldn't have yelled. And my son goes, you know, after a while, the apologies just start to not matter. I mean, you really just have to change your actions.
Oh, that was so adult and mature.
I couldn't have been more proud.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, exactly. But my husband was like, don't, you know.
Yeah. Don't talk back to me.
Nope.
It's hard.
I thought to myself, Matthew, that was so, you know, so wise.
It is hard, though, to like, as a parent, to know when to step back and be like, okay, because you do, I feel like I know how we were raised. Yeah. But we were raised to be like, you respect your elders. You don't talk back. You know, I don't care if you think you're right. It's my word's last word. And so it's really difficult, I think, to shift. And I think there are still times that applies, but I think it is difficult sometimes to shift and go, I have to look at this person as a like, especially our oldest, like our daughter is so wise beyond her years. She speaks so intelligently, sometimes better than we do. And so I notice it mostly with like social.
She's manipulative. You're tied up in it. You're falling for it. You fell for it.
She got you already.
No, but I mean like when she talks about what she heard on the news and I'll say, wow, that's just so mature and intelligent. And you're looking at all sides of the situation. And I wish I could be, but I think as adults, we're just more jaded, right? We're stuck in our ways and our brain is there. And that's kind of where we go.
Well, and to your point, now we can have those conversations, right? Like my son can, same thing. He'll now want to talk about when politics was going on and he wanted to talk about it. And it was great to be able to converse.
Right.
Whereas growing up, I voted for who I voted for because my dad told me who to vote for.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I didn't know one thing about anything and it didn't matter.
Yeah.
So now we have those conversations that we weren't having before.
Yeah. And sometimes she teaches me things and I feel like I always like kind of giggle when she'll go somewhere and talk to someone else like that, like a family member or something. And then, you know, sometimes I think they think we've put those views in her mind. And I'm like, you have no idea who this girl is. Like she's constantly schooling us and giving her. And sometimes I have to like rein her in. I'm like, okay, You're 13. You've never had any life experience. So yes, you can have some views, but you can't say your opinion is right because you've not been there yet.
Oh my God, dad, do you really think? And I'm like, yeah.
But she'll get there. And I think that the more, I think that her being like that is going to just make her a more well-rounded adult. So I'm excited to see what she turns into. It's exciting.
Well, my favorite thing
is young people are literally like talking. They can talk to adults and converse.
Yeah.
You know, like as opposed to hi, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so and then walking away.
Yeah. There's some adults that I feel like can't do that. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I do love talking to having a good conversation with one of the kids.
Yeah.
Because it's so interesting. They're living in such a different world than we were, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah. Like, well, I want to get to your book, but I want to say one more thing about that because that brings up a good point. I know we notice this. Do you ever like just do like a one-on-one with one of your kids? Because like when we're one-on-one with them, we're like, wow, there's such a little person in there. But when they're together, I feel like they're competing for attention. And so we don't really get to see their full personality. So do you guys ever just do like a one-on-one with one kid and kind of get that personality out?
So I used to, especially when they were younger, it was so important to me. I would do an hour. So with four kids, and I had to do 1 hour a week. In my head, I didn't tell them that, but 1 hour a week, I was going to do something, at least spend time with one of them by themselves. So 4 hours a week, I was like, I can do 4 hours a week.
Yeah.
You know, I can figure that out. That was super important.
Yeah.
And now with the video games and stuff like that, I find now I end up sitting next to them. I could care less about, I don't even know Minecraft. I don't understand it, but I will sit next to you while you play. We're not even really talking, but that's okay. So it's so funny how it's changed. It used to be, let's go out for ice cream. And now I'm sitting there.
Yeah. You're like begging for their attention. Yeah.
Please love me. Like,
yeah.
So I'm sitting next to you. What is that? Is that a diamond sword? Did you mine that? How did you get that?
I don't know anything that they're talking about ever.
Oh, I go on about stupid stuff all the time.
It's a different language.
Yeah, for sure.
I just try to learn just enough where I can ask stupid questions, where it gets them frustrated, where they're like, you don't understand. See, this is, and then they go into the explanation, and then I gather all that information. So the next time I just use it against them when I'm playing, I'm like, oh, well, why wouldn't you use the stupid diamond arrows?
I love when Eddie's like, Dad. It's always like, oh, you're so dumb.
So dumb. Yeah.
It's just a game, kid. It's just a game. You got to catch up.
Anything.
I know. So you've got all this going on with all four kids and a marriage, I'm sure also takes work. Where did you find time to write a book?
So that's so interesting. I think when I was in fourth grade, I was going to be the youngest author. I felt like if I was 13, I was going to publish my diaries so that parents could read my diaries and be able to see what fourth grade girls.
What a great idea, actually. Right? So someone should do that.
I was supposed to be this youngest, you know, youngest writer. That never happened. And then as time went on, everyone started to get a little bit more manageable and we started to hit the groove. I think, to be honest, it's almost as if I started the book as almost like therapy, because as I started to write it, oh my God, I was in tears.
Yeah.
And I kind of think it was so busy and so chaotic and crazy that I didn't get to live it. Like I didn't get to process any of it. So the plan was I was going to write this book for mothers who are raising kids with special needs, just to show that, you know, you're not alone. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's the way I was writing this. And I was writing these chapters and I forgot half of the stuff we had gone through. So writing it was so amazing.
It's like cathartic. I mean, I couldn't
write fast enough. Right. Yes. Yeah, so cathartic.
It's the worst word. Yeah.
I don't even know that word. So kudos to you guys.
So, and then it kind of morphed into this, wait a minute. Oh, now that I think about that, I remember when so-and-so told me to, you know, just, oh, you know, I can make my kid do that. You just don't discipline enough.
Yeah.
You're just not hard enough. You have to show him who's boss. And then, so little by little, when I was thinking about what we were going through, these little pieces of what everyone was used to say and what used to hurt. So then it became, wait a minute. Let me tell these other parents, these moms, that they're not alone, but let me also give a little bit of insight to our friends and our extended family who they do not mean, they never meant to be insensitive or hurt us in any way, shape or form. But wouldn't it be great if they knew
how to support you correctly?
I mean, my number one, the one of the things I always think about is, gosh, you would never think that letting me go to the baseball game. I know you want to go to the baseball game really, really bad, Mom, but I would love to be able to sit in those bleachers and watch the baseball game and not have to run after the two littles, you know?
So
if you just stayed at home with the two littles so I could sit on the bleachers, like, that would be huge.
Yep.
So, but I didn't want to say, can you stay home? Because you know, you wanted to go, you know, so it was, so I kind of, that's kind of how the book kind of happened. So I was writing. And then my husband said, you're not finishing this.
Yeah.
Because with my ADHD, that I am so like you, Ed, because when I'm done, I'm done. And so that was wonderful writing it. Thank you. And then, you know, my husband said, we're not, the only way this has to be done. So he kind of.
No, I got to finish it.
I wrote it. Isn't that the work? Thank you. Goodbye. Yeah. I'm done. So then when I realized, oh, wait, I have to tell people about it. Oh, that's not me. I just want to write. Thanks. Yeah.
Well, that's like, it's so funny because it's like you've got the part that benefited you out. So the rest doesn't benefit you. So it's like, I think everyone does that, right? Like that's what's hard to push through that next level to say, now I have to implement the next steps.
And it's like, oh, that's not as fun. Marketing, that's not my thing. That's not where my strength is. And so, so it's interesting how it changed because yes, I wrote this book to help. And then I would say to my sister something like, yeah, I'm kind of done. And she would say, well, nobody, you can't help anyone if they don't know it's there.
Exactly.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think, and we all live in this world where we think that, you know, because everything is just right at our fingertips, like social media and everything's viral, that you think you create something and everyone's just going to find it. Right. And it's going to go and everyone's going to get help from it. And like, you know, we've even done that with this podcast and, you know, like we went through like a big slump and we're really trying to like come back. But it's like, because I did the same thing. I got burnt, you know, I did it. I'm doing this because I want, when we're doing this, like talking to you, I'm like, I get pumped up. I'm excited. I can't wait to put the episode out. When the work comes to like edit and market and get it all and do all the, we're like, oh, I don't want to do that tonight. No. And I'm like, who? And Eddie's the one that's telling me like, why are we doing this? We're not doing this to chat with people, even though we're loving that part. We're doing this because we're dying to get these resources out to a community that needs them.
So she, you know, I don't even know why we do this. And I'm like, shut up, because we're doing this. First of all, we're doing this because there's a bunch of equipment that we paid for. So we're doing this, period, because it's free for us to do this.
Well, thing is, I just want to, like, I have to be the best, right? I have to be the number one. Like, I want to be the best at it. I want to do the best at it. So if the numbers aren't always there every week or something, I'll be like, why are we doing this? No one's reading it. But then we'll hear from people. Because first you think like, oh, maybe it's just my friends and family, right? I'm sure you thought the same thing. Like, maybe just my friends and family are going to read the book. But the truth is we get feedback from people who I'm like, where did this person even find us?
Friends and family.
I don't even know this person. You live on the other side of the country. We've got so many listeners in Germany that it surprises me all the time. And I'm like, who are these people? Where are you? If you're listening, please, like, I'll reach out. I'm like, we're always looking to figure out like who is listening to us because we really want to connect, not just by sharing our resources, but I want to connect with, I mean,
yes, send us German chocolates and German beer. We want to taste Germany.
But everyone
send that to us.
Yeah. Everyone has a story and I want to hear everyone's story. I'm so interested. What kind of feedback have you had from families that have now read the book?
So it's interesting. The extended family, like, oh my God, I had no idea. Of course. Right. Like, whoa. Yeah. The moms, the mothers are get it, of course.
Obviously,
and they're like, oh my God, right? I've been there. Yes, I remember that. Or in fact, there's some new moms who are just starting their journey. who have read it, and a couple of them have said, like, I know now that it's not just me. Because when you first start, you feel totally alone.
Yeah,
for sure.
Which is funny because I feel like we talked to somebody else, and the disabilities community is the largest minority. So why do we all think we're so alone? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
It's so interesting. I couldn't have felt exactly like I couldn't have felt more alone. And yet, so now when these new moms were starting this whole process, a few of them said, this is so good because I've been feeling this. Yeah. And I didn't realize, you know, and then you have like the grandparents. I have a few friends who have given them to their parents, and they'll push back a little bit. Like one of the moms said, you know, the part about you being annoyed that you have to give us Christmas gift ideas, because in the book I say something along the lines of, don't ask me what my kids, what you get my kids for Christmas. I got to worry about them myself.
Oh my gosh.
You want to buy.
It's so, I make an Amazon wish list. Now that they're a little older, I'm like, just make it yourself. But even like when someone's like, did you make their Amazon list yet? I'm like, no, I didn't. I will get it a week before Christmas. Like, that's when my brain can think about Christmas. Cause right now I'm thinking about whatever. It's just like, I'll get there when I get there.
It is like a pet peeve of mine because I don't have time to make your list. I'm making my list. Yeah. Right. Like, and I'm not going to give you one of my good gifts.
Yeah.
13 year olds, you're not taking any of those.
Get them a gift card. Exactly. They don't care. 13-year-olds all want the same crap.
Right. Like, and I say all the time, you know, you would probably buy something that I would never buy them. And it's awesome. That
it's
would
better.
Be so cool for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't go for me. Don't let my
list restrict you from whatever awesome thing you're actually thinking
Maybe
of. Just
thinking
go crazy.
Completely out.
That's actually true. Cause the people that don't buy off the list or don't always get them the best gifts.
Yeah.
It's something different. Mm-hmm. Right.
Chris Nell. Yeah.
So, shout out.
Shout out. Yeah. Best on.
So it's delivery. Interesting. So that one grandmother was like, you know, good we problem. Have lives too.
Yeah.
Oh. And I said, you know, I'm sure you do.
But I don't care.
My mother feels the same way. Yeah. And she still makes me do it. You know?
Yeah.
So don't worry.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'm just not going to promise it's going to be in a timely fashion.
And it could be the socks and underwear that I was going to put in a stocking or something.
Yeah, you're going to get the crap.
That's on you.
I'm definitely buying the good gifts because I want them to like me this week. So you're going to get all the leftover stuff on the list.
Absolutely. 100%.
So true. So now, is there anything that you would want families to get out of the book specifically?
So for me, I think the number one is being non-judgmental, because I think the judgment piece, it's hard to be in crisis and then on top of that feel judged. I'm not good enough. Why am I must be a bad parent because my kids are out of control.
Right.
The judgment, we put that on ourselves. We do not need that help. Mm-hmm. And I feel like being judgmental is so easy.
Yeah.
It's so much harder to stop that thought. So to me, I feel like that's a big deal. Like, live and let live. I always say, no worries. I feel like that's such a great, like, no worries. Sorry I didn't make dinner. You know, the kids were out of control. No worries. You know?
Oh, that's a great one.
Like, how about you just give us a pass? Because the same way that I would give you a pass or anyone a pass, because no, we're not trying to be difficult and we're not trying, you know,
to be late.
Yes. Or a total mess, you know, or forget, you know, I used to forget appointments and hate. I felt so horrible, you know,
like, I can't tell you how many times we missed the dentist this year.
I don't want to talk about it.
Right.
And then they're like, the next appointment's in 4 months. I'm like, come on, just can you just make a space open because you know I'm going to miss this one? Like,
yeah, but they get all nasty about it. And
they're
you're
not,
like,
well,
yo, I didn't. You're totally right. I was just sitting on my ass watching TV being I forgot my dentist appointment.
I don't
blame
them.
We had tons of shit.
We have missed the dentist too many times at this point. I don't know how. And then sometimes I'm like, I know we missed it. Just charge me for the appointment. Whatever you got to charge me. I don't care. I'm willing to sacrifice diapers for my kid. Just take the $30 out of my account. I don't care at this point. Like, I want to be there. Trust me, I want to get it done.
Right.
That's I made it for a reason.
Yes. Like, trust me, I am trying. Yeah. I feel like that's the big thing is that we are all just doing our best. Mm-hmm. And I think that if everybody else could see that and kind of just have a little bit more compassion, and that means for the special needs community and just in general, yeah. you know, just a teeny bit of compassion would go so far,
for sure.
I think, for parents.
I like the no worries. That's such a great answer for so many things. And really on the flip side, like if someone just said to me, no worries, don't worry about it, I'd be like, oh, thank you.
You breathe, right? You just, the first thing you do is you breathe.
I think
right.
like a great, and I know it's like so different, but I just noticed this dynamic, like, you know, we just had a family member pass away and I had to cancel an appointment for it. And they were like, oh, I'm so sorry. No problem. Don't even worry about it. Now, if I had just called them and been like, hey, listen, we had a rough morning and it's just not going to happen today, they'd be like, that's okay. Well, you that's have an appointment valid. And right. I get like, I mean, we work in customer service. I get how much it screws everything up when someone cancels on you last minute or no one shows or like, I 100% get it, but I just don't care. When it's well, us. Right.
And you also know that when they miss something at some point now you're realizing, well, obviously they missed for yeah. a reason now too.
Right. Like, right.
It is what it is.
Yeah. You know, and sure. you know what? There's a mindset and I don't remember like exactly what it's called or any example. No, but or any examples, yeah. but like, I can't believe I'm going to do this on our episode, but I listened to another podcast. I'm even going to say the Dax Shepherd one. I'm obsessed
I love
with it.
I listen yeah. to him all the time.
Yeah. And Jesus, he always says, Dax, how, I know I life, love him. So
much. Be on Ellen.
I talk
be
on about Ellen. It. There's like a meme that I saw and it says, it was like a woman talking to her husband and it was like, I heard on Dax Shepherd podcast. And it's like, that's it. I say it on a daily basis. It's like my therapy, but he says, I've heard him say it a million times. Like, you know, he used to like drive in a car and if someone caught in front of him, he'd be like, what an asshole. And Kristen Bell would say like, she just, her mindset's different. And so she'd be like, maybe they cut in front of you because they're on the way to the hospital. They have an emergency. And you know what? He probably didn't. He probably just cut him off because he's a jerk. But it really doesn't matter when you change the way you react to it. And in more, and I feel like Eddie's more like that, where like something will happen and he'll, I can't remember last time you got road rage. I'll be like, use the horn. Like, I'm instant.
I've like literally irritated. Done like a 180 when it comes to that.
Yeah.
I used to be, I was bad. Like,
but I think
I was
like,
really bad.
If you apply you that the changed? Other way. Yeah. What did change?
What do you think changed?
The kids.
Really?
100%.
Really?
Having the kids. I'm really? Not going to lie. Like, cause you can ask my mom, like everybody, like very intimate people in my life. And they'll be like, Eddie was, he would tell you he's invincible. I would do the stupidest things. There's things on video of me doing the stupidest.
That's actually
things.
A good point. Like when we first got together and those kids with the bikes and you were like, I'm just about to fight like 12 kids. And I was like, what are you doing? First of all, they're like 5 years younger than you and you're ready to like fight them.
I'd but, annihilate them. So
but well, I think yeah. that you're right. Like it's just a mindset. Once you have kids, you're like, okay, let me take a yeah. break. Let me take a breath.
But yeah. it wasn't just the having the kids, but it's the having little people. Now, the person that cut me off could be somebody's kid. The everything in my life
or
is
someone's dad or yeah, yeah.
And that's it's always stop, man. Put yourself in their shoes. Like stop.
So we ask all of our guests this: if you had a moment to talk to our community, what advice mm-hmm. would you give them?
So I think I would tell them that it does get better, no matter what better might look like. And I think that hope is probably the best thing in that sense, because I think that we can get so low. And I know I'm not the only one, but low, right? Like a guttural low that a lot of people not in our community might not understand. But so to be so low and to think, I don't know, you know, how we're going to get through this
yeah.
or whatever it may be. For us with four kids, to see that with time and therapy and medicine, now they all have their, they, you know, we all still have our issues, but we are managing in a different way. We're not in crisis.
Yep.
And we will again be in crisis that, you know, it will happen, but right now we can breathe. And I think I would have never, ever thought we would be where we are today, you know, 6 years ago,
yeah,
4 years ago, 3 years ago. So I think that to me, I think that piece of advice, I don't know if I would have believed it. So also, you have to believe me.
Yeah. Well, I think that key word is hope. Like even more than, yeah, you'll get out of this. It's like refocus, and you got to get your head around the fact that like, you got to have a little hope, like that it ebbs and flows. And today mm-hmm. is hard. And, you know, look back a week ago, a month ago, a day ago, and just go, yesterday was hard. Today's going to be easier. And then it's going to get easier. And then when it's really good and really easy, you got to go, okay, I know it's going to get rough again. So mm-hmm. I got to be ready and, you know, get your army
and
ready.
Enjoy and celebrate, right? It's almost like celebrate those moments that are good, because we so often focus on the bad. So like, if there's a day that somebody didn't punch a wall, that's a good day, mm-hmm. you know, like that's a good day. Yeah. So yeah, it doesn't have to be, and it can be something super little, you know, but I agree.
I think that's great. I love that word, hope. I feel like it's like a key word to have in your arsenal at all times. So tell us, how can everyone find the book, find you if they want to connect with you?
So the book is on Amazon, and my website is julie-falcone.com.
Perfect.
And yes, and everything's there. And it's exciting. I think it's super fun. And I love talking to other parents. So on my website is my email. And so anyone can email me or just a chat or whatever is awesome. I love it.
I mean, I would encourage everyone to go grab the book for sure. Grab two so you can give one to a family friend or something like that.
Grab one for each of your family members. Tell them they all got some homework. You guys can all sit down, hash it out. Because that's what I'm going
to
do with my
family. A little book club to discuss it afterwards so you can really understand.
Gosh.
There are discussion questions on the website, actually.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Shoot. Okay.
I love discussion questions.
So I think that's great. That's great.
I don't, because that means I actually have to read the book.
And
that's the hard part.
True. Definitely. So
Audible?
Oh, is it on Audible? Eddie's favorite.
That'll be next.
Yay! All right, cool.
Thank you so much. This was really awesome. We have to have you on again because I feel like we could talk to you for like hours.
I am having a great time. This is so fun. It's so nice.
Oh,
this
is a blast. Great.
I know.
This gets me all excited. And then I'm like, yeah, this is what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
This is our purpose. And then in a couple of days, I'll have to do something marketing and be like, wah, wah.
Yeah, you'll get burned out.
This is not the fun part. I don't like this part.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Just shoot me a text and I'll be like, it's okay. You got this.
Yeah. You're not allowed to quit.
Yeah. Right? We'll encourage each other.
Thank you. I know you guys, this was a blast. It was so great talking to you for sure.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm really excited to have you on.
The only thing is going to be an editing
nightmare. I'll put my links on all the Facebook and, you know, everything like that too.
Oh, we appreciate it. I usually will send this out in case anyone, there's no pressure, but if in case anyone like wants to use it, whatever sound bites I make, I usually will email them out so you have them. So if you want to use those, because that's kind of neat too, to have the soundbite. So whatever I make, I usually send out. This episode, I'll have to email you and tell you when it's going to come out, because I honestly don't know.
Like next week, like we don't have anything built up.
No, we do actually have.
We do?
No, I think we're good. So not next week, because we have an episode that was supposed to come out today. But our hosting site got hacked like by hackers.
It's being held hostage because they
it's
want
being
money.
Held hostage.
They want money to give it back
money.
To them like full to give
yes,
them like full
terrible.
Rain on their own thing. Yeah. It's
oh, my
stupid.
God. The call I was just on. We're done now. But the call I was just on with those other podcasters. The girl said she jumped ship from our hosting platform, Buzzsprout, because of it. And I was like, that's so crappy. Like, they can't control it.
It's not their fault.
And they've been so communicative and so nice. And they keep trying to, like, so they have the site up. Mm-hmm. But you have to, it's like you have to go through like a third wall so that's protected. Right. But I can't upload anything.
It's the fourth wall.
And I can't see any of my stats.
Scott.
And then, like, on our website, we have a thing so you can like listen to our show from our website, and that's connected to it. And I'm thinking that you can't listen from there. Right? So I'm just like, I'm just going to wait it out. Be honest. Like we haven't been doing minisodes in between. So I'm like, I don't think anyone's like, where's their episode? Like when it gets up and we're going to start fresh. We're going to start doing video stuff too on YouTube. And so I'm just like, we're just going to start fresh when we start fresh and get the new episodes out.
Awesome. So that's crazy.
I feel really bad for them. They said that they're like basically holding the site hostage for money. And the hosting site's like, I'm not paying them.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And so I'm like, don't. Yeah. I'm like, I'll wait it out. They're doing their best to like get things going. So I'm going to be paying. And they're such a great hosting site. But so we're going to release that episode at some point this week. And then next week is a break. And then so probably the week after that.
Okay. Keep me posted.
Yeah. I will. I'll shoot you a text and let you know everything. And I'll get you. I'll shoot you an email and give you everything. And I'll send you all the graphics and everything. So you have
awesome. It. Yeah. Thank you so
and
much.
And then if you could send me whenever you have time, no rush, cause we've got a couple weeks, any photos or anything you want me to use. Yep. So like if it's a headshot or a picture of the book or anything, and I'll use all that for our graphics too.
Yeah. I'll email that over. That's easy peasy.
Perfect. Awesome. It was nice talking to you. Thank you.
It was really nice meeting you.
We'll keep in touch.
It was great meeting you.
See you.
All right.
Bye, Julie.
Bye. Bye.
Happy practice.
Okay, you're going to eat?
Well, thank you so much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, please make sure you share with a friend and leave a review.
You can find all the resources mentioned in this episode on our Facebook or Instagram on @specialaboutspecial. Thanks again, and we'll see you soon.